left corner to Aginla. Aginla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aginla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
All right. How we doing? Let's get it going. It is a Monday, December 30th. Boy, it's almost the end of 2024. Did you know that?
I do happen to know when they're playing the New Year's Eve game, if that's any consolation.
I believe it's on the 31st this year. That one's for you, Wedley. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Hopefully you had yourself a wonderful weekend, a weekend where the Flames played not once, but twice. This hour of Flames Talk is available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts, of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio. Okay, back-to-back games on the road this weekend. 3-1 win over San Jose on Saturday, 3-0 loss to Vegas on Sunday. So they get two of a possible four on that back-to-back road set. I thought they played well, first of all, in San Jose. Thought they were very much deserving of the win against the Sharks, despite the fact it was maybe a little bit closer than they would have liked it to be. And then I thought they fought really hard against the Golden Knights, but couldn't find a way to score a goal and went up against a Golden Knights team that, hey, that's a really good team. And that felt like one of those nights where the other team played their game for pretty much 60 minutes. There was not much variance in the way Vegas played. And yeah, there were some stretches where maybe it looked like they were a little frustrated because they weren't able to find a way to beat Dan Vladar, but they stuck with it, played their game for 60. And that's one of those nights where we haven't seen a lot of these this year, if I'm being perfectly honest, but where you come away saying, hey, the other team played their game. And sometimes the Flames and that roster just isn't going to be at the same level as another team's roster if the other team plays the way they need to, especially on the second half of a back-to-back. And I thought that was exactly what happened last night. The Flames didn't play a poor game. They fought hard for 60, but they just weren't able to match the red-hot Vegas Golden Knights, one of the best teams in the National Hockey League, and a team that is now 15-3 on home ice. Flames just didn't have enough to topple a team like that on Sunday, but thought through six periods, that was a pretty solid road trip, all things considered.
I don't think you could find more polar opposites in opponents for a back-to-back set, particularly coming off of the Christmas break, where you have the San Jose Sharks, who are now with the loss, 1-8-1 in their past 10, and Vegas 9-1-0 in their last 10. They were talking about a team that's 1-9-10 and a team that's 1-1-10. So first of all, kind of weird how the schedule happens to work. That's just a footnote, of course. In San Jose, yeah, I think you're right. I think the Flames were able to, as close as the score looked, it didn't feel like the game was nearly that close. And full marks to Dustin Wolf and the compliment against San Jose. We talked about it not necessarily needing to be a quote-unquote must win, but a can't-lose game. And they go out and they ice a game that you can play that game 10 times, and I'm certain they come away with at least 9 wins with the effort that we saw. Vegas on the second half of back-to-backs is tough. Scrap that 15-3-0 home record that you mentioned. Just Vegas, by the nature of Calgary's inability to find success in that building, step one. Step two, again, it's the second of back-to-back games. You're playing twice in 24 hours. And you're right, I think, first of all, full marks for Dan Vladar in that game, particularly in that first period, really kept the Flames in it. But it became, as the game went on, from my perspective anyway, Vegas just simply matched the work ethic that the Flames had. And
they've got the better roster.
And when you go through 1-18 skaters, they've got more skill. So when you get into a situation where you can't outwork your opponent and you can't outskill your opponent, you're going to see nights like that. It's not a knock on anybody's work ethic or effort level, or even the fact that it was the second of back-to-backs. It was just simply a matter of fact of, okay, if Team A is giving 100, Team B is giving 100, it's going to come down to A, goaltending, and B, the skill that the other team or either team can ice.
Yeah, and I mean, Samsonov went toe-to-toe with Vladar and didn't allow a goal. And even in stretches where Vegas was controlling, Samsonov made some big stops en route to the shutout, and Vegas did what they needed to do. But I guess I came away overall quite positive about Calgary's two games on the road, thought that the effort was there, and I thought they hung with Vegas. Even though they didn't win, and even though Vegas was full marks for the victory, I still think you can come away from the game on Sunday, especially on the second half of back-to-back, and say, hey, the Flames hung with them, and they were competitive, and they made it wasn't an easy win for the Golden Knights. Like, it wasn't the 5-0 win from October. It was a much more difficult win for Vegas to achieve, and you know, it was still decisive, and the Golden Knights can come away feeling like they played a really good game. But I think the Flames made it far more difficult on them this time around than the first time. And even though Calgary didn't score a goal, I still think, you know, you can be happy with the effort and some of the details, and I think you can feel good. I don't want to spend too much more time because there's a couple of topics that I really want to dive into, but I think you can feel good going into the Vancouver game on New Year's Eve about the way things have gone coming out of a week-long break. I think the Flames have done some pretty decent things.
I know you're a fan over at Money Puck of the playoff odds that they put out. Do you ever go into the individual games and their quote-unquote deserve-to-win-o-meter? Have you seen that?
No.
So what they do is very much the same process.
I know what it is, but I didn't see it last night.
56 Vegas, 44 Calgary. So to your point, no, it's not like this was a lopsided game. It was just a game that Vegas had a little bit more in.
Yeah, I bet if you go back to the game on October 28th, it was far more lopsided on the deserve to win a meter. Want to talk, I'll read this text, then we'll get into our two topics. Andrew writes, good afternoon, early Happy New Year, boys. Forgive me, however, on the heels of another back-to-back, still seems to appear the Flames are protecting Wolf and giving Vladar the tough road games. Is this not seriously going to inhibit Vladar's marketability when it comes to possibly moving him at the deadline? The only thing I would say to that, Andrew, it's a fair question. Wolf played well in San Jose. Vladar was dynamite in a losing effort in Vegas. No, I don't think it will. And I say that because when you listen to Kevin Woodley on Thursdays, Kevin Woodley's one of the kind of foremost outside goaltending authorities on the planet. He's not employed by an NHL team, but he has access to ClearSight Analytics and a number of other things that he looks at, more than just goals against average, wins, losses, and save percentage. And so do 31 other teams. And I'll just take Jordan Sigalette for example, right? Jordan Sigalette, director of goaltending for the Calgary Flames, and his goaltending crew with Jason LaBarbera and Mackenzie Skapski, if they're trying to target a goaltender, they're not just looking at a piece of paper and saying, oh, who's got the best save percentage or the best win-loss record. They're looking at their metrics. They're looking at some of the ClearSight metrics and others. They're looking at their video. So, no, I think the raw numbers on Vladar, while they have not been amazing, I don't think that they're going to seriously inhibit his marketability or trade value, because I think teams that are looking for a goaltender, they know what they're looking for. And if they identify Dan Vladar as a guy that fits the system or fits what they need, they won't be looking at raw save percentage, wins, losses, goals against average. That stuff is really taken a back seat in the goaltending community over the last 10, 15 years.
Yeah, and you're getting to a point with technology.
And by the way, just before, fair question from Andrew, yeah, but I don't think it will.
Well, and we're at the point now where there's three or four or five independent agencies that can provide you literal shot-by-shot video of everything that Dan Vladar or Dustin Wolf or any goalie in the NHL. We use it for scouting at FC Hockey, where you can literally break down every single shot a goalie faces in a year and evaluate what's going on, what he's doing, what the team's doing around. So it's not as simple as surfing over to NHL.com,
exactly,
clicking the stats section and pulling up save percentage.
So Daniil Miramanov and Andrei Kuzmenko come back for the game in Vegas, and I actually didn't mind Miramanov. I thought that he had some attempts. He was assertive on the offensive side of things. Kind of got hung out to dry on the game-winning goal. He was the guy back when Uyghur kind of, he made the decision to go a little aggressive, but then didn't get it deep enough. And because he didn't get it through, it allowed a fast kind of five-man rush the other way for Vegas. Flames had all kinds of issues sorting out on the rush, and Miramanov was the only guy who was still in position, but unfortunately wasn't enough to stop the Petrangelo shot and the Howden redirect. So that ends up being the game-winning goal. But I thought Miramanov played well. Tough spot to get back in, but I thought coming back in a second pair role with Mackenzie Weegar, thought he held his own pretty decently. But Kuzmenko's the guy I want to talk about because I would not suggest that he return to the lineup in the shot out of a cannon way that you would hope after sitting five for injury and healthy scratch reasons. He had the minor injury going on, and then he also was healthy scratch for at least three of those five games. Zero shots, zero shot attempts again. You come back into the lineup, and you have zero shot attempts. I don't know how you fix this Kuzmenko issue, and I know that you can, and I've seen it on social media, and I'm sure we'll see it on the text line. Like, how do you expect Kuzmenko to play better if he's playing on the fourth line or playing with this player? I don't really feel like that's an excuse at this point anymore. You know, Kuzmenko started on the fourth line, got elevated to the Zeri line by the second period. You still can't have zero shot attempts if you're coming back into the lineup for the first time in six games and you have one goal all season long and the coaching staff has been pleading with you to shoot more and then only have zero shot attempts in your return to the lineup. So it's a bit of a head scratcher for me because I was hoping to see Andre Kuzmenko look like the Kuzmenko that we saw in his first game as a member of the Flames after the Lindholm trade in Boston. Like, Kuzmenko was shot out of a cannon that night. You're like, holy, who is this 96 guy? Yeah, we didn't see that in his return to the lineup in Vegas. And that was a little frustrating to see.
No, he certainly didn't look re-energized, and he didn't look like a guy that was hell-bent on avoiding the press box. Again, you mentioned zero shot attempts in the narrative of, well, how do you expect him to get shot attempts on the fourth line? To your point, one, he was elevated to counter it. And apologies, Kevin Rooney, I'm not trying to single you out. But Kevin Rooney had four shot attempts. And so if you're talking, well, how can Kuzmenko get shot attempts on the fourth line? Well, your fourth line center had four, well, not even four times, because you can't just go zero times four, math. But like, it's not an excuse anymore. Not that it ever was, but it doesn't matter where you're slotting in the lineup, whether it's the fourth line, whether it's the first line. If your only objective on the team, on the roster, in Kuzmenko's case, to generate offense, he's not there to kill penalties. He's not there in the last minute of the third period to preserve a lead. He's there to generate offense.
Yep.
And if your primary weapon, maybe even it's a 1A, 1B situation, but your shot is arguably your best weapon, and you just, for whatever reason, flat out refuse to use it, it's on you.
Andre Kuzmenko did speak with us at the Scotiabank Saddledome Monday afternoon. Flames had an optional practice at noon today, so there wasn't really anything to see on the ice. It was just six or seven guys who were getting a sweat in and getting a little work in. But Andre Kuzmenko was one of them, and he spoke to us. It's always entertaining when Andre speaks with us. I don't want to keep on harping on the lack of shots and the lack of offense because I really want it to work for this guy because, as you'll hear in this next 3 minutes, he's a very hard guy to dislike, as Andre spoke with us after practice on Monday.
Obviously a good break, and then got a couple games back here. How did it feel getting back in the lineup the other night?
Yes, it's a good break. Now a very good feeling. I'm ready for comeback. Because I tire, no score, a lot of games, a lot of months. But I don't worry, I understand. It's every player, I think, was this moment. And it's not a problem. I need to work hard on ice and gym is better for me. Simple, always simple. Don't worry, be happy.
I love the comeback.
Yeah, why not?
Does it feel like the goals are close?
We'll see. I hope. Yes, it's so close, but for me, the four scores is these other steps. I want step by step. The first step is a very good feeling. Second step is hard work in gym, and step on ice, and a lot of moments. The score not so close, but I hope it's a little bit close. Yeah.
It seems like you're not shooting as much, Andre. Do you feel like you have to shoot the puck more and more shots?
No, but we play against five guys. Yeah, it's not easy. if I shoot every game is maybe 3-4 shots is a dangerous shot, yes, I understand I score. But now is a maybe I don't good play, probably, yes, because I need the more shot, I need the more dangerous moments for score. Dangerous shot, it's not simple shots, because if you shoot simple shots, how many percent when I score? Probably 1% from 100%. It's, I don't like. I like a dangerous shot. But before dangerous shot, I need a good position for shot. There's a lot of things. You understand? Yes. Mm-hmm. You watch hockey. Yeah.
<For sure>.
Yes.
Those yes. Shots, though, creating rebounds.
No,
is
I
that
can. Enough? I can for you a couple shots for red line. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the middle. Okay. After a game, I question for you. What do you think? I shot. No, this is joke. This is joke. Yeah, we'll see.
How did you feel last night?
It's okay. It's good. Yeah. Stay positive. Very important moment now. Yeah. This is not easy. I understand. But if I more things about this moment, it's my mind is very bad. But stay positive. Every day work. Next game, very important, every game, couple shots, couple moments, try, don't score, okay, one more, shot, stay positive, everyday work. So simple answer. Simple interview.
It's tough to dislike
How
him.
Can you not love him?
It's tough to, like, you want to see it work for him, but I think there is a slight disconnect right there, because you heard him talk about it. You heard him joking there about, like, do you want me to shoot from the red line? I'll take 3 shots from the red line and then come talk to me. Like, but as Ryan Huska has said many times, when you're struggling to score and goal scoring is your primary objective, shot volume. Go back to shot volume. And there was literally no shot volume on Sunday night in Kuzmenko's return. He did not put one shot towards the net. And I know that he feels, and this is what the Flames are trying to work with him on, he doesn't feel like a shot from the outside is a good shot. He feels like that's a wasted shot. Unless there's traffic, or unless he's in a high danger area, he feels like it's a wasted shot, so he doesn't take them. And the Flames are trying to get him to change that mentality a little bit, so that he's just always got a shot mentality, whether he's in a high danger area or not, whether there's a ton of traffic in front of the net or not. He's a very, and this is the first time he's confirmed it, but we've talked about this before. They've been working with him on this all season. Like, be a little less selective about your shooting positions, but I don't know how you necessarily go about doing that.
Well, you want to talk about wasted shot, so on and so forth. There's an infinite number of shots you can, in theory, take. It's not like you're only allotted 30 a game, and once you hit that plateau, your team's not allowed to shoot anymore. So, yeah, I get not shooting from center ice just to bump up the shot attempts and the shots on goal, but there are times and places inside the offensive zone where his shot can cause problems. Whether or not he scores on them is irrelevant to me. But one, direct them, because your job is to score goals. You literally can't score a goal outside of a deflection, I guess, without shooting the puck. But two, his shot is so problematic for goaltenders that, you know, a rebound might be laying there for a line mate to bang in, or you can get your own rebounder.
That's what I've been saying. Like, that's what's been so frustrating for me, is that, like, okay, Connor Hellebuck or Andre Vasilevsky, yeah, they probably are good enough that Kuzmenko takes an outside shot, they either just hold it, get a whistle, which isn't the worst thing in the world, you get an ozone faceoff, or they direct the rebound to a teammate. Like, the best of the in the world, outside shots, they're doing a very good job. They can do a very good job of directing the rebounds. But if you're going up against a middle tier or bottom tier goalie, like, maybe the shot goes in because they're not as good, or maybe the rebound isn't placed where it should be, and now all of a sudden you get a second or a third opportunity. I'm That's what the Flames are saying. Shot attempts create chaos, and when you've got as good a shot as he does, well, help us create chaos.
Even if the shot doesn't get through and hits a body, it's going to drop. And how many times have we seen Jonathan Huberdeau, for example, fish out a loose puck in and around the net for a scoring opportunity or a goal? So why not just, again, pucks have to go to the net in order to score. I just don't understand why there's such a hesitancy. And not even, like, again, shot volume versus shot quality. Completely understand that, disagreement, or, you know, differing thoughts between player and coaching staff. But when your shot selection favors shot quality and you literally have none, that's when you've got to sort of reassess things from my perspective.
Yeah, because there's no quality with no volume.
Exactly.
This was Ryan Huska on Monday afternoon as well, the head coach, when asked about Andrei Kuzmenko.
We all want him to shoot more because we know the type of shot that he does have. For me, it's more important that he's around the puck. Because when he's around the puck, he's going to put himself in positions where he can use his shot. The concern comes when he's not touching it. And that's where I think part of the issue comes into play. So how do you go about getting the puck more or getting around it more? And for me, that's about skating and making sure you're competitive to be there on loose pucks. You're competitive when it's you and someone else fighting for it. That's what he needs to focus on. And then the shots will come from there.
So that's Andrei Kuzmenko, who had zero shot attempts on Sunday. Combine that with another gentleman who is really struggling and also possesses one of the best shots on the team. How do you explain Kuzmenko and Sharon Govich combined with one shot attempt against the Vegas Golden Knights? None from Kuzmenko in his return, just one from Sharon Govich. It's now 10 straight games without a goal for Yegor. He has just 2 5-on-5 goals all season. 3 even strength goals all season, because he's got a 4-on-4 goal in there. He had 22 of his 35 goals at even strength last year. He has 3 even strength goals approaching the midway mark this year. And it is starting to become somewhat concerning, because Sharon Govich kind of started this pattern in New Jersey, right? He had the 20-plus goal season, then the year that he fell right way back, healthy scratch down the stretch in the playoffs, and that's when the Flames go and acquire him. And so they bring him in after that season. Has a 35-goal season last year and was a revelation, and now this year can't seem to figure it out. This was head coach Ryan Huska on Monday when asked about Sharon Govich and how he's playing right now.
I don't think it's where it needs to be. I don't think it's from a lack of try. I think we as a staff have to find a way to put him in more positions to succeed. And for him, it's a little bit like Kuzi, where I feel like he needs to have the puck. So, we experimented early in the year in the middle of the ice. He's played the wing for the last little while. When he's at his best, he touches the puck. So that's something that we're looking at now to see how we can help him out as he moves forward. Because it isn't from a lack of try from him, for sure. It's just making sure we're putting him in positions where he's going to have it more often than he has over the last little while.
And so you've got Kuzmenko and Sharon Govich, two of your 3 best shots on the team, and they get one shot attempt against Vegas. And you can't even really tell me that it's because Vegas was so smothering, because the other guy who's got the best shot on the team playing the toughest minutes of the 3 is Matt Coronato, who had 9 shot attempts against Vegas. How about Coronado's shot line? 9 attempts, 5 shots, 7 scoring chances of those 9 attempts, and 4 high danger scoring chances over at Natural Stat Trick. Like, Matthew Coronato was, and good on Megan Mickelson. That was a bang on choice, I thought, for hardest working Flame after Sunday's game. So you've got Coronato, who is really starting to figure it out a little bit, and we'll talk a little bit more about him on the round table. So he's firing all pucks towards the net because he's confident. Right now, you're not seeing that from Sharon Govich and Kuzmenko, and I don't know what. This is one of 247,000 reasons why I'm not an NHL head coach. But one of them is because I don't know what you do in this situation. I don't know how you change this narrative for these two players. To your best asset, or one of your best assets for both players, your shot. Why are you double clutching? Why are you deferring? Why aren't, and I think we all can put ourselves in their shoes or skates and say, when you're confident, you're not using the things that you're good at as much because you're not as confident in them. And that therein lies the issue from a coaching staff. How do you get them to fall back on the things that they're best at here as we move towards the second half of the season?
On Sharon Govich in particular, this is going to be an oversimplification because he hasn't played with them all season, but is he just a bad match with Connor Zary in terms of a winger center? We've heard Huska say today, Sharon Govich needs the puck more. Zary thrives for me with the puck on his stick. Whenever the puck is on Connor Zary's stick, that's when I feel most confident in whatever line he's on. And he's the type of player that can skate it out of his own zone, can gain the zone entry and drive the net. So I just wonder if you've got two players that rely on having the puck in the offensive zone.
Is and it just specifically about Sharon Govich?
Yeah. Is that just a combination that just can't find the right chemistry? And again, this isn't to pin it on the chemistry aspect of that line, because Sharon Govich is, as we also heard Huska say, he's been tried on the wing. He's been tried down the middle. There's been multiple line mates that he's not sort of clicked with this season, the same way that he did last year when he was a 30-goal scorer. I just wonder if that particular line isn't a fit for him, and if you could find a way to re-energize him on a different line.
Yeah. And maybe the problem is I don't want Coronado off the backline line.
And you absolutely love what you're seeing out of the top line with Huberto, Kadri, and
exactly. Postosol. So, like, I don't know what you do.
I don't have a solution. I just toss out hypotheticals.
No, but I think it's a fair hypothetical that I guarantee you has been thrown out 30 times in the coach's room in the last hour as well. A few texts, 960-960 on Kuzmenko. Do you think anyone will take a chance on him at the deadline? I still think there's a chance that they can move him, but you're not going to be getting a whole lot back as it stands right now.
And I think you
and
might.
I don't think that's a problem. Like, I do think there's still something to be said about a change of scenery for Kuzmenko and opening up another roster spot for a young player if you're the Flames. Like, if you can, if it comes down to it and this doesn't start to turn a corner at any point and you can only get a fifth or a sixth round pick for him, I still think that that's something you think about doing because it does open up a roster spot for
him. I think it's something you just automatically do. I'm concerned that you're getting into the situation or the environment where you're going to have to retain a little bit because, yes, you have a lot more money to play with at the trade deadline than you do on game one of the regular season. But you're still, if you're an acquiring team for Kuzmenko, that's a big gamble of eating into that cap space for a dart throw, if you will. So, and again, it's an expiring contract, so it's not the end of the world. But I do wonder if you're going to have to do something. So the team that's acquiring him still has room to do other things.
This reads, Kuzmenko has not been good. Trade value probably not high. Is putting him on waivers an option? If he's picked up and would have got nothing in return anyways, do we care? Maybe a stint with the Wranglers can get through to him. I honestly don't feel like that works, but I can't sit here and say don't do it because nothing to this point has worked. And again, we hear him, you want it to work. I really do want him to get back to where he was last year, where he was one of the most fun players on the team. Like our boy Mick on the text line, huge fan of Kuzmenko's, and I understand why. Mick writes in, if it's me, I'm sitting down with Kuzmenko and a bottle of vodka, a Russian interpreter, and explaining to him it's either get hungry or it's time to go back to Russia. This reads, call Kuzmenko 007, zero shot, zero goals, and seven laughs per minute in interviews. That comes from Jared in Red Deer County. He is an extremely likable guy.
Yeah.
We know he possesses an extremely high level of skill. The challenge is, how do you get that out of him? And I think the challenge, like, also a very likable guy, Yegor Sharangovich. How do you get a little bit more out of number 17 as well? Those are two topics the Flames will be wrestling with for quite some time until they start being answered. That's for sure. It's Steinberg and Vickers. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk. Hopefully you had yourself a good weekend. Hopefully you enjoyed the two games the Flames played. And hey, we've just gone through it. Christmas is done. Holiday season coming to an end. Life is hectic enough, but especially when you or your kids are in sports, it's really hard to keep up with everything. And the folks over at Bel Air Cleaners, our boy Alif, Bel Air Cleaners offers full service laundry and dry cleaning all over Calgary. And here's the kicker, and I don't know how many places do this anywhere. They're even cleaning sports equipment. They'll pick up, clean, and deliver your gear so it's always fresh and clean when you need it. Plus, with advanced sanitizing technology, you're protected from odors and harmful bacteria. Bel Air Cleaners, also proud supporters of Calgary's sports teams and youth programs. They're partnered with KidSport, Flame Sports Bank, Parachutes for Pets, and more. Hey, lighten your load with Bel Air Cleaners and check out the sports equipment service as well. Visit bel-air.ca.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's Hockey Station. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Time now for a Monday edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable. It's brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. And now, the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Monday roundtable. So, gentlemen, Flames come off a 1-1 road trip to come out of the Christmas break. That is the first two of a pretty difficult stretch of three games in four nights. And that 3-4 concludes on Tuesday night, the New Year's Eve Classic. It's the Flames at home to the Vancouver Canucks. And, gents, late last week, we had the conversation on a roundtable about what is the team that you feel the Flames have the best chance of tracking down? And while there's still plenty of time for that to play itself out, as of right now, the Canucks are sitting in the final wild card spot and have just a 1-point edge on the Flames going into Tuesday's game. Gents, how big does this third showdown between two top rivals feel on New Year's Eve?
Ask me that question again, Pat. Not the question you just asked me, but the one that you asked me last
week. Oh, what team do you feel like the Flames have the best chance of tracking down?
I'm going to change my answer. So last week I said the Kings, but that was before I knew that in addition to the drama that's going on between JT Miller and Elias Pettersson, that the Canucks are now without not only Pettersson, but their captain and their best player in Quinn Hughes. And it doesn't sound like that's a super short-term injury. So I've got to go with the Canucks now because, as you mentioned,
come on over to my side. Come on over.
Yeah, I'll come over to your side, Pat. Yeah, I'll leave Vickers all by himself on the Kings side of things. But, you know, 1 point separates the two teams. And the Canucks, it just starting to feel like one of those seasons that's not meant to be. Now there's time to get healthy. There's time to sort out the drama. There's time to turn things around. But this is not the Canucks team that I was expecting this season. As a matter of fact, before the season started, I thought it would probably be a two-horse race for first in the Pacific between the Canucks and the Oilers. And the Oilers haven't been great, but they've certainly been better than the Canucks. So it does feel like a big game. It feels like a big game for the Flames because even though they lost in Las Vegas on Sunday, you know, they were certainly very much in that game against the Pacific Division leading Golden Knights. They had only given up one goal in the first 50 minutes and just couldn't score one and then gave up a couple in the final 10 to get shut out 3-0, but you know, played well against the Sharks in San Jose. And it's a big game for the Flames. They've been good on home ice. But with that said, the Canucks have surprisingly been way better on the road than they have been at home. So it does feel like a proverbial 4-pointer on New Year's Eve and like a big game for both teams.
I keep ripping Pat off with this, where it's not necessarily a must win, but it can't lose. And yes, you can actually lose this one and still be fine. But for all the reasons you just laid out, Willsey, this is that proverbial 4-point game against the team you're trying to catch in the standings, a team that has one game at hand and will still have one game at hand coming out of this. But if you can come away with two and them with zero, suddenly you leapfrog them in the standings. And just because we like to reference those money puck playoff odds, the Vancouver Canucks are the closest team the Flames can catch in the Pacific Division. Flames playoff odds currently sit at 27.1, Vancouver at 55.9. But suddenly you give Calgary two more points and take two away from the Vancouver Canucks and you're getting closer in that gap. And again, Pettersson, Miller, whatever happens there, Pettersson, Hughes, whatever happens on their injury front, the Vancouver Canucks are just simply a team that haven't been able to ice their full sort of off-season projected roster in a regular season game yet this season, between injuries to Demko, Pedersen, Miller's absence, Hughes, now that you mentioned that this season for Vancouver, not to go super hyperbole on a Calgary radio station while the calendar still reads 2024, but this is turning into a everything, sky is falling, everything's going wrong type season for the Canucks, which just as equally for the Flames as it's important for the Canucks to come away with two here and maybe give themselves a little bit of breathing room for whatever that's worth on December 31st.
Well, there's a few things here. I mean, this feels like a big game, you know, just looking at the standings. It's always a fun game. It always feels like a big game when the Flames and Canucks are both relevant at the same time, which they are. So, you know, it'll be a great atmosphere at the Dome. It'll be New Year's Eve. You'll have lots of Canucks fans, and we know how well Canucks fans travel. So it'll be a great atmosphere. And I, so like, just those things make it feel like a big game regardless. Then you throw in 1 point separating them, and then you throw in the other part of it, and guys, I don't think we can understate or overstate, rather, I think we can overstate how much of an opportunity the Flames have on their hands here without Pedersen and without Hughes. Like, if you're Calgary, you need to take advantage of that, because who knows, when these teams play for a fourth time and final time in March, you know, those guys will probably be back, or you know, you have a pretty good chance of those guys being back. And so this season series could very well determine who's the final wild card team and who's not the final wild card team in the Western Conference. I just, everything that goes into this feels like it's a big game on Tuesday night. And also, don't forget, the last time the Canucks played, they had a 4-1 home ice lead on the Seattle Kraken with 4:02 remaining on the clock before Seattle scored three times in the final 4 minutes and 2 seconds to send it to overtime. And then just one of the more hilarious sequences, they call Tyler Myers sometimes, they call him the chaos giraffe on social media, and he was full chaos. Like, he had a great opportunity and then passes to nobody, sets up a 2-on-0 the other way, and Seattle wins it in overtime to complete the comeback. This will be Vancouver's first game since that game. So I just, everything that is happening in Vancouver and the standings and the rivalry, this feels like a massive night for the Flames on New Year's Eve.
The chaos giraffe?
Yeah, that's Matt Rose was the one that tipped me off on that one.
Wow. Imagine a blue line with Tyler Myers and Nikita Zadorov.
How
do you translate chaos giraffe into Russian?
I don't know. They did have that blue line for times last year.
Weren't they paired together for a brief moment too?
They were, yeah.
Yeah. The chaos giraffes, I guess, is what you would call it.
Heck of a tag team.
That into Russian. But yeah, it does feel like a big game. And let me ask you this question, guys. I don't think that at the start of the season, or even a few weeks ago, anybody would have suggested that the Flames had more talent than the Canucks. But when you subtract Elias Pettersson, arguably the team's best forward or most talented forward, and Quinn Hughes, who's definitely their best player, couldn't you argue that the Flames are maybe now more talented than the Canucks are?
I mean, you take away those two players and you've got a top line that's rolling pretty nicely for the Flames.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, sure you could. You know, JT Miller is still a pretty dynamic player. There's some other good players, but I mean, it also, now it really tests Vancouver's depth, which I don't know if you looked at going into the season and said that's a massive strength for them. You know, I thought they were a deeper team last year after the trade deadline than they are right now. So it also messes with their depth. So not only do they take a skill hit, and you could make an argument that it puts things on a far more even playing field going into Tuesday night in that regard, but I also think you can make a pretty good argument that without Hughes and without Pedersen, like, you're looking at a deeper Flames team for the game on Tuesday night too, which is why I think, Wilsey, it's such a massive opportunity.
Yeah, and I think you could have argued the Flames were deeper at the beginning of the season, but didn't have that high-end talent. So you subtract that high-end talent from the Canucks, and I don't think they're more talented or that they're deeper. So yeah, it's a massive opportunity. Of course, if you're the Flames, you can't take the Canucks, even minus Hughes and Pedersen, lightly. You can't take any team in this league lightly. So let's hope that doesn't happen. But it's a big game for both teams. Like I said, the Flames have been way better at home than on the road. Canucks have been way better on the road than at home. So should be an epic New Year's Eve showdown inside of the Saddle tomorrow night.
It is our Daily Flames Roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg on this Monday edition of Flames Talk. Gents, I say this not like, I say this coming from a place of, man, I've been really impressed with Matt Coronato over the last little bit. Pretty much ever since he's come back up from the American League, I think you can sit here and say that Matt Coronato has really played some good hockey at the highest level. So knowing that, I think we're probably all on the same page there. How close to figuring it out once and for all? We always use that term, like they figured it out at the NHL level. How close is Matt Coronato to that? Or in your mind, is he already there?
I think he's already there. Now, only time will tell. It's an everyday league, and he's trying to stay in it for the first time in his NHL career or his professional career. And I believe that that's exactly what's going to happen, because Matt Coronato is no longer a one-trick pony. He's no longer a player who has to score goals to be effective. He is a guy who is doing things to help his team win hockey games, even when he's not putting the puck in the net or setting up one of his teammates to do that. You know, I think about that game against the Golden Knights in Las Vegas on Sunday. I thought he was, if not their best player, then one of their best players. And, you know, the Flames as a team didn't score a goal in that game. So obviously Matt Coronato didn't either, but he did a lot to create offense. And for me, the biggest area of improvement for Coronato this season, and I think he'd say the same thing, and I think Ryan Huska would say the same thing, is his play without the puck. He works his tail off without the puck. I think he, as a Harvard man, understands that the harder he works without it, the more he's going to have it. And the more he has it, the more he's going to score. And that's what Matt Coronato loves to do, because when he scores, he gives the Flames a chance to win hockey games. So I do think that Matt Coronato has figured it out. He's always had a high hockey IQ, but you have to play the game differently, going from college hockey to pro hockey and then from the AHL to the NHL. And he looks like a guy who gets it. And I don't think that, even though he has been put in a position to succeed by the coaching staff, any young player, or really any player who's put on the wing with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman, in my opinion, is being put in a position to succeed. I don't think that Coronado's riding the coattails of Backlund and Coleman. And I think he's an important part of that line. He brings a little bit different element to that line. So I think Matt Coronato has absolutely figured it out. Now, as a young player, he's going to have to continue doing what he's been doing, and that's being good with and without the puck.
That's an excellent point, Willsey, where he's not just coattail riding the work put in by Backlund and Coleman. He's playing the game the right way. He's certainly competitive. I don't think there's any doubting that. And Pat, to your point about since he's been recalled, that recall came on October 31st. So since that date, he's got 7 goals and 9 assists for 16 points in 26 games. That's third on the Flames in scoring. Now, it's not all measured in scoring. Willsey laid it out really good there where, again, he's competitive off puck. He's reliable 200 feet of the ice. But he's also producing at a clip that makes him your third leading scorer since his last recall. And let's be honest, his last appearance, you'd think, in the American Hockey League. He's here. He's arrived. The only question now is, okay, where is he on December 30th, 2024 versus where he could be 3 or 4 years from now? There's still lots of room for growth there. But to me, he's got this thing figured out at the NHL level. And now it's just determining how much further he can take it.
Okay, so the only reason I will say that there is still some to be figured out is that he's got 9 goals, 18 points in 31 games. So it is starting to come a little bit on the offensive side of things. Now it's how does he take that offense to where I think a lot of people believe it can go. And when Ryan Huska told Mick on a coach's show earlier this month that he believes Matt Coronato can be a point-per-game guy in this league, that's kind of the final step is, because I'm with you. I think he's really gotten a grasp on the 200-foot game. We know how hard he works. We know how he's excelling on a line with Backlund and Coleman, and that is not an easy, you know, in one breath you can say it's easy because of how those guys elevate, but on the other end, you're playing against the best opposition on the other side on a nightly basis, and you're not really getting sheltered in any way, shape, or form playing with those two guys. So you can't, you know, you very rarely can you be a passenger on that line, or you'll get exposed. And so he's done a great job there, and his offense isn't suffering as much as you might think it could. Like, to your point, Wilsey, Mick named him the hardest working Flame on Sunday. He had 9 shot attempts. 7 of those attempts were scoring chances at Natural Stat Trick, and 4 of them were at high danger. He was Calgary's best player. And now it's okay. How do we see him start to translate to even more offense? How can he become one of Calgary's primary offensive drivers? I think it's going to happen. I'm not wondering if it's going to happen. I do think it's going to happen, but that'll kind of be the final step for him in figuring it out. But yeah, I mean, he belongs in the NHL. I don't think he's ever seeing American League action again. This is the level that he is supposed to be at. And we're seeing night after night examples of that here over the last little bit. So that would be the only caveat I would say is, okay, now how does he turn the comfort level and clearly belonging here into more offense? But that's just a time and comfort thing, and I think that'll come in the not-so-distant future.
Me too, because, you know, for me on some nights, including Sunday night, he has been one of the Flames' offensive drivers, and he's 22 years old. You know, sometimes people forget that. Yeah, he's a first-round pick, and you want those guys to develop as quickly as possible, but you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of time. Sometimes they have to spend time in the AHL. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they spend a little bit longer in that league. But, you know, guys with the pedigree and the talent and the work ethic of Matt Coronato tend to figure it out at some point in time, and I think he has. But to your point, Pat, I still think there's plenty of room for growth. Like I said, he's 22 years old. He is not even in his first season as a full-time NHLer because he played in a couple of games with the Calgary Wranglers this season. But I do think that he will be a member of the Calgary Flames for a long time to come here. And he still does make mistakes from time to time. All players do, and especially young players. But he's a smart guy. So I think as he continues to develop, he's going to turn himself from a guy who right now is on pace for 22 goals and 44 points this season into a guy who becomes a regular 20-goal scorer in this league. And I think he certainly has the potential to be a 30-goal guy in the NHL. So that isn't the type of player that just grows on trees. So I'm super excited about Matt Coronato, as much for what he does with the puck, now as much as what he does without the puck. I just love his work ethic. I love how he's looking to find battles and isn't afraid to engage in battles. And he's turned himself into a really important player for this team. And, you know, as you guys have talked about, it's about more than just the offense for whoever is playing on that line with Backlund and Coleman. You've got to be good defensively because you're going to get a lot of tough matchups, defensive zone starts, going up against the other team's top players. So if you've got big holes in your game, you're going to get exposed playing with those two guys. And while Coronato probably does have some small holes in his game, almost every player in the league does, and especially 22-year-olds at the best level, then you just got to continue to develop your game, and I think that's exactly what he's done.
Yep. It's been fun to watch, and it's a neat story because remember what the narrative was at the beginning of the year when he wasn't getting into games and he got sent down to the American League? Like, people were up in arms, and the message that we was like, just hold on. He'll be back up. This is a numbers thing. Just give it some time. And he didn't know exactly what was going to happen. Unfortunately, Anthony Mantha's season ended, and that reopened the door for Matt Coronato. But the message that, you know, kind of we got, and the message that we tried to project out to Flames fans is, he'll be back. He'll be back. He'll be back. Like, this isn't a full-time thing. Just give it some time. And that was the message they sent Matt to the American League with. Go down there. We don't know if it's going to be a week. We don't know if it's going to be a month, but you'll be back up. This is a numbers thing. Just give us some time, but go back down there and be ready for the opportunity. And when, not if, but when the call comes, be ready to get back up here and be an impact maker. And I give Matt a lot of credit because I know for a fact he was pissed about being sent down there. And that's what you wanted to hear. Like, if you're Craig Conroy and you're Ryan Huska, you want him to be upset when they send you to the American League. Yeah. He was upset. He went down there with the right attitude. He played some good hockey for a week with the Wranglers. And then the door opened. And the most important thing at that stage of your career, whether you're in hockey or anything else, is when the opportunity comes, you have to be ready for it, and you have to be in the mindset, and the preparation has got to be there so that when the opportunity comes, you're just ready to burst through the door, and they're not going to second guess it and look to somebody else if it doesn't work right away. And that's exactly what Matt has done, and I give him a ton of credit for it.
Yeah, me too. And it's okay to be pissed off when you get sent down.
Yeah.
It's not okay to pout about it, at least not long term, because that's not going to help you and that's not going to help the team. So yeah, he was pissed when he got sent down, but he quickly turned the page, played a couple of good games for the Wranglers, got called back up by the Flames, and let's be honest, and you guys have both said as much, he's probably not going back down again. Yeah. As long as he continues to play the brand of hockey that he's been playing of late. And I, again, think there's still plenty of room for growth and improvement in Matt Coronado's game. But, you know, it's exciting to say that because, again, he's on pace for 22 goals and 44 points, and he's only 22 years old. He's third on the team in goals with 9 this season. So, you know, he's a really exciting young player for this team. And the more of those guys you've got, the brighter the future looks.
We will see you on the final day of 2024. We'll see you Tuesday morning. Thank you, Willsy.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Thanks to Shan Vergie, our outstanding producer this hour as well. Vic's on Twitter. As always, go give him a follow at AA Vickers. This hour wraps up, and so does the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.